Right now, the annual Assembly of State Parties to the International Criminal Court starts today in New York, kicking off a 10-day event. The International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia is wrapping up its work, and the ICC is now turning its attention to Afghanistan, where a war crimes inquiry could include American soldiers. Central Time executive producer Judith Sears-Poisson spoke with Thierry Cruvillier. He's the only journalist in the world who has attended and reported on all of the important post-Cold War international tribunals. He's a visiting professor at UW-Madison teaching a course on international criminal justice.
Just a couple of weeks ago, former Bosnian Serb General Ratko Mladic was found guilty of committing war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide by the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. How significant is that Mladic verdict?
Well, obviously it's significant because Mladic was probably the key character in the war in Bosnia. And it sort of completes the work of the Yugoslav court and makes it clear that the nature of the crimes that were committed during that war in the early 90s and the responsibility of these main leaders. So in that sense, it's a confirmation, a judicial confirmation on what historians and journalists or whoever has worked on this period of history know. It's also the end of the work of these tribunals. So symbolically, it's about 20 more years of justice in the Balkans that is roughly coming to an end, although national courts in these countries still work. So it's not over, but it's over at the international level in a large measure. So in that sense, it's a symbolic moment. The downside maybe is that the hope that justice would sort of help change the political dynamics in the Balkans and the relationships between the former nations of Yugoslavia. That hope was just a hope. The situation today in the Balkans is that nationalism is still on the rise. Former war criminals are praised and legitimized. And it seems to be a country that is as divided as ever.
You have attended all of the trials brought before contemporary international tribunals for war crimes and crimes against humanity. How much does a verdict or this kind of ending of a long process mean to victims and survivors?
It's always hard to tell because we don't really have proper surveys. We're going to always have a number of victims, expressing themselves. But my experience is that what these kind of trials mean to victims can vary tremendously. And so it's a bit difficult to have an idea of what is it that the victims in general feel or understand or accept. So I wouldn't want to venture in these kind of speculations. You're going to have a whole range of reactions, I suppose. Some of them will be very satisfied. For some of them who are silent, maybe they found other ways to deal with what happened. And trials, punishment is not necessarily the answer to every victim, except that those ones we may not hear about them or from them. So it's a whole range of reactions. Certainly, victims in Bosnia will be satisfied. There is little doubt about it. Again, as I said, it seems to be a bit difficult beyond Bosnia and beyond the Bosniak Muslim community how it's going to be perceived because of these nationalist positions that political leaders are still taking in the region, in Serbia or Croatia.
The International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia also sentenced former Bosnian Croat General Slobodan Praljak this week. As the judge at The Hague read out the verdict confirming his 20-year prison term for war crimes, something very unexpected happened. He pulled out a vial of poison and killed himself.
And drank it and killed himself.
Yeah, after rejecting the verdict. Does that taint the work of the tribunal?
A number of commentators have said so, and I'm not sure I really see why in the long run. I do understand that, yes, it gives nationalists a sort of a great picture to say how this court is unfair and how the war criminals that they, I mean, the individuals that they take as war criminals are actually national heroes. And that kind of heroic kind of gesture may help them. But I don't think in the long run that's necessarily something that would last. The conviction was established. I think the facts are pretty strong. And it's spectacular, but it happens. It happens. Remember Goering at Nuremberg. It's not a first. It's very spectacular because it happens inside the courtroom and in front of cameras. But it's not a first, and these are the kind of events that can happen in any of these courts. Of course, it's very rare. And of course, the fact that it happens at the very, very end of the existence of the tribunal makes it a symbol. And a number of commentators have actually said it was a fitting finale for the court. Yes, perhaps, like, you know, it's a good line. But I'm not sure that in the long run it will be like a major event that will be remembered.
Thierry Cuvelier is the only journalist in the world who has attended and reported on all of the important post-Cold War international tribunals. He's a visiting professor at UW-Madison, teaching a course on international criminal justice. And Thierry, the 10-day annual Assembly of State Parties to the International Criminal Court starts today in New York. What will happen there?
Well, technically, that's where they have to sort of vote the budget. That's like probably the key outcome of this National Assembly. What is interesting perhaps this year is that it also happens at a time where international criminal justice is in deep crisis. The International Criminal Court lacks credibility a lot. It is challenged by a number of states, and it is challenged for its mediocre achievements and the poor quality of its trials and the low productivity of the court. So we are at a different stage now in this evolution of international tribunals over the last 25 years. And it's a time of credibility crisis and legitimacy. It also, simultaneously, what is interesting is that at the same time that the court is in crisis, it is also asked to get involved in many more situations. In Afghanistan and Burundi, the court had decided to open investigations a few weeks ago. And on top of it, NGOs, human rights organizations, are asking the court to get involved in Myanmar, in the crisis of the Rohingyas in Burma, where it has no jurisdiction, so it would need the United Nations Security Council to decide for it, and it probably won't happen because China and Russia would probably oppose that. Or perhaps the U.S. I don't even know if the U.S. would support it. And so it's a bizarre situation where the court is probably taking even more work when it's already struggling in achieving something significant.
As you mentioned, the International Criminal Court is considering opening an investigation into Afghanistan. The United States is not a participant in the ICC, but that Afghanistan inquiry could involve U.S. soldiers. So what would happen, Thierry, if the ICC decides to do this investigation? U.S. troops are implicated, but the U.S. has not ratified the ICC.
So technically, the court, yes, the United States are not a member of the ICC, but Afghanistan is. And as a result, anyone committing crimes in Afghanistan can fall under the jurisdiction of the ICC. So the ICC opening an investigation in Afghanistan, we know it's official in a way. I mean, we know what they have in mind, which is that the crimes from the Taliban are probably the primary targets. Then comes crimes from the Afghan National Forces, Defense Forces, and crimes committed by U.S. soldiers and CIA agents in some detention centers. We're talking about torture and rape, mainly in the years of probably 2003-2004. And of course, it's very sensitive because that would be the first time that the ICC targets a major power. And that's that's the context I think we have to see it in, is that the ICC has been very criticized for only targeting African states and weaker states. And it has to prove that it can go beyond the African continent and also target major powers. So it has two investigations at the moment now, which is one in Georgia, where actually Russian troops are in the pipeline. And it's a way to balance politically, I guess, their investigations by having Afghanistan that would target the U.S. Now, let's also be reasonable. If it happens, we know that they have it in mind, but who knows what can happen in the meantime. If it happens, it's going to be very small. We're talking probably of a maximum of a handful of individuals. So let's keep in mind that this is a highly symbolic gesture. But the relationship between the United States and the ICC has been complicated. And under the Bush administration, it was a very hostile relationship. Since then, there has been some sort of mutual accommodation between the two. And so what are we going to see? Either the United States is going to ignore entirely the ICC because it's irrelevant, or because it's just, you know, easy to deal with it. It seems a bit unlikely. The most likely is that they revert to a much more hostile policy. But it's impossible to tell at the moment. And it's going to probably take years from now before any indictment is coming out of the court. So it's an event. It's important. And at the same time, we have to keep in mind that it's symbolic, much more than really significant.
Thierry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thierry Cruvellier is a journalist covering the International Criminal Court. He talked to Judith Sears-Poisson. And Judith, there's more where that came from.
There is. Thierry and I continued speaking after that interview about what it's like to spend 20 years covering these war crimes tribunals around the world. That additional interview is available at WPR.org and on the Ideas Network Facebook page.